All right, thank you very much. As is mentioned, my name is Grant. I am an assistant professor at Iowa State University. Much of the work I'll be talking about today was conducted while I was a PhD student at Cornell, and I'll be talking about land use change and legacy effects on the urban grassland soil microbiome. And so to get started with, I'll mention what is urban grasslands, or what are they, definition and importance. And of course, these are turf grass landscapes, and we use this as an umbrella term for several different reasons, which I'll get into. But urban grasslands tend to have light traffic, maybe kept for aesthetic or recreational value or ground cover purposes, semi-regularly mown, could be irrigated or fertilized, don't necessarily have to be. So these can represent a wide range of environments, could be roadsides, residential lawns, commercial areas, institutional. When we start talking about sports fields or golf courses, when that gets into a sand-based system, so tees, greens, super high-end sports fields, we don't really include those in the definition of urban grasslands. And again, we use this term to capture the fact that these can act at ecosystem level scales. So we can think about these not just as one person's yard versus the next person's yard. You can see here in the top image, the property on the right, a little bit darker green. Maybe they manage their yard a little bit differently. But when we zoom out and we think about this at city scales or larger, you can start to see that the individual differences of properties fade away. And we can start to think about and generalize these the same way that we might talk about forest remnants, ag ecosystems, etc. And we can also think about the impacts of land use effects, both past and present. So in much of the Northeast and the Midwest, if we're urbanizing areas, if we're developing, those may be formerly agriculture or formerly forested. And in terms of the microbiome, there are all kinds of abiotic and biotic controls that we might think about. So for example, if there's a shift in land use, you might see a change in plant litter quantity or quality, change in above and below ground allocation, different rhizosphere interactions. Are we going from an annual crop to a perennial crop, and so on? We can also think about this in terms of abiotic control. So are there changes to pH? Do we have different soils being mixed? Does that change the texture, the density, so on? And with regards to urbanization, this is a huge issue. So in 2012, the Secretariat Convention on Biodiversity in their Cities Outlook suggested that 60% of all of the urban land area between 2012 and 2030, 60% of that had yet to be developed. So that signifies a huge potential for urbanization around the world. And with regards to the soil microbiome, we're then interested, so with these urbanization effects and shifts in land use, do we have change in the soil microbiome structure? You can think of that as the who, the which tacts are present in the soil microbiome. Do we see a change in the function? So what are those different tacts doing? So who and what are major questions that we have? And then ultimately, we can look at that in terms of broader effects, so changes in soil soil organic matter, carbon, nitrogen, and so on. And so for my research, I was interested in looking at land use change effects and legacy on the urban grassland soil microbiome. So if there is a change in land use, are there legacy effects on the urban grassland microbiome, both composition and activity, the who and the what? And we can compare urban grasslands to other more characterized, well-characterized environments. So if we can talk about agriculture or forest as reference ecosystems, can we talk about where urban grasslands may relate to this as well? Of course, there's lots of folks that I need to thank for the research, both funding and technical support. I did this work with the Cal Niffen Lab at Cornell. I won't get into too great of detail talking about how the actual study was done, but here what you see, this is Baltimore County, Maryland, so this is part of the Baltimore Ecosystem Study, long-term National Science Foundation ecosystem work. This is Baltimore County, Maryland. The map that you see is a 1973 coded aerial image map of the land uses. The areas that you see in yellow are agricultural at the time, the areas in green are forested, and the urban areas are in gray. So we used a series of these mapped GIS files from the 1930s to the early 2000s to map land use. We used telephone survey data, again from other ecosystem study work, to identify potential landowners that might be interested in having this research done. We used Maryland property tax records to look at home age and use that as a proxy for when lawns may have been established. And we contacted homeowners directly, did some random sampling mailings, and actually went door to door in neighborhoods across Baltimore County to find homeowners interested in working with us on this study. We recruited 24 homeowners from across Baltimore County, Maryland. Again, this is all out in the county. Baltimore City was mostly developed by the time period we were looking. So we had 12 properties that were previously ag and 12 that were previously forest. You can see those in the green and the yellow there. We also used two reference sites. So one was the Oregon Ridge Park, which is the FR. That is the Ecosystem Studies long-term forest site. So we used that as our forest reference. We also used the McDonough School, the AR there, for the ag reference. So again, that's a private institution in Baltimore. There's a farm attached to that, and that has been farmed for several decades. So for the study design, we had our reference forest and our reference ag sites. And then we had our residential urban grasslands of different age groups. So we had four replicates for each age. We had our younger lawns, so lawns that had been there for about 10 to 25 years, mid-age for 30 to 45 years, and our oldest properties were 60 all the way up to 120 years that had been a house and had a lawn there. We did soil sampling from these, sampled down to a meter. We did this over a number of years. I'm kind of talking in terms mostly about the 0 to 30. We did a whole lot of soil measurements, microbial community work, and activity. Today, I'll primarily be talking about the MySeq work that we did with 16S rRNA genes for the bacterial communities and ITS markers for our fungal communities. And I'll talk about how that relates a little bit to the soil conditions that we found. So this is a principal coordinate analysis of the 16S rRNA gene. So in the bottom corner, I will have bacteria or fungi, so you know which part of the microbiome I'm talking about. If you're not familiar with looking at these graphs, what you're looking at here is a dissimilarity plot. So points that are closer together, the microbiome taxa and relative abundance are more similar. Points that are further apart are more different. And so in the top panel, I'll point out the gray boxes. Let's see if I can get a cursor here. Oop, all right, guess not. So in the top panel, the gray boxes there, those are our forest references. Those are pretty different than the rest of the microbiome. If you look in the B panel here, these are our ag history sites. So the white triangles are ag references, all of the colored triangles are the urban grasslands, and you see that there's no distinct clustering. We can't definitely say that there's a whole lot of differences going on there. But in our forest history sites, we do see some really interesting things going on, and I'll blow this up so we can take a look at it. What we see, and I've added these arrows and labels here, those arrows aren't computational, they're just indicating trends, so I'll put that out there. But we see a really large shift from our reference forest to our younger lawns, and then as our chronosequence of lawns increase in age, we see a shift in that microbiome tending back towards the reference microbiome. So this is a super interesting result, really surprised us. And also, we can explain about 52% of the total variation in the microbiome on that first axis alone. So that's pretty incredible for this kind of work. We don't usually see something like this going on. So this is a constrained analysis of principal coordinates. So here we are using soil variables, so things like pH and nitrogen, which were pointed out earlier as major controllers of the microbiome. So we're using that to constrain what's going on. So here we can describe in the upper plot about 29% of the total variation using a few important soil parameters, again, pH, nitrogen being major players. If we look at the relative abundance of these different dominant taxa, again, as I pointed out earlier, what's going on the ag side, so on the very left of this image, we have our ag reference and then our lawns of different age that were formerly on ag properties. Those bars, you know, look pretty similar to one another. But what I'll draw your attention to is the contrast between our reference forest and our younger lawns on our formerly forested sites. So what's going on in the soil? We see major changes in pH. Our reference forests were about pH 5.5 or a little higher. Our lawns were anywhere from about 6.5 to 7.5. So overall, there's close to three orders of magnitude going on in pH amongst our properties. So that's pretty important. We also see a change in nitrogen status. So in the reference forests, obviously those aren't being managed. They're receiving depositional nitrogen. The lawns may have been fertilized over some point in time. In addition, urban areas receiving more nitrogen deposition. So we're going from a lower to a higher nitrogen status. So when we look in the literature, we can divide our different taxa into how they respond to things. So for example, our pH responsive taxa, and I'll explain how I have this color coded in symbols. So our acidobacteria, for example, like acidic conditions. So if they go from acidic to a more neutral condition, you would expect to see their relative abundance decline, which is the minus sign that I have indicated there. So the green color indicates that the movement that we see is the movement that we would expect. We would expect a decline or an increase relative to the conditions that we see. The Firmicutes, which is the purple bar in the younger lawn there, that's a really large increase, which is something that we weren't expecting to see and still totally can't quite explain. But as you can see with all of the green taxa there in pH, things are mostly going the way that we would expect them to go. If we look at nitrogen-responsive bacteria, we see that in the pleiotrophic groups, those are the ones that like high fertility, they move in the direction that we would expect, as well as the oligotrophs, the ones that like lower fertility, again, are moving in the direction that we would expect. So we see major taxonomic shifts in bacterial abundance track with shifts going on in the soil conditions, primarily pH and nitrogen, which, again, the literature would bear out things that we would expect. I'll now talk about the fungal work from the ITS, so some similar images. And the main takeaway that I want to give you with the fungal work is that it tracks with the bacterial work. The major players we see are similar, but the degree is less. We see less shift in the fungal microbiome than we do in the bacterial microbiome. But we still see this shift going on in our forest history. So from our reference forest to our lawns of our different ages, we see this shift. It's pretty important and significant. We can still use those same soil parameters. The models bear it out. pH, again, being a major player, nitrogen as well. And when we look into the relative abundance of these different dominant fungal taxa, what we see here in our reference forests, our basidiomycota, that is the orange bar in front of you, those are known wood decomposers. So again, in a forest, you've got a lot of woody debris, other things. When you make that a lawn, you have fewer trees, less wood, so it might make sense that those decline. But what's also interesting is the groups there that I've highlighted, the Dothidiomycetes and Cerdariomycetes, are leaf decomposers. So not wholly abundant in the reference forests, but highly abundant in the lawns, and more so on the lawns that have a forest history. So what's going on there? I can only say this from anecdotal evidence. I have some colleagues that want to work on some land cover mapping, but with our ag history sites, those properties didn't have any trees around them, right? They were cultivated, and maybe the adjacent land was cultivated as well. So once it became a lawn, and over time, maybe those areas are still more open. Whereas our forest history sites, you can see those long shadows. Obviously, we've got large trees either on that property or on adjacent properties. So maybe those properties were selectively logged to develop the house. Maybe they're next to ravines or other areas that stay forested, and so they receive more blow-on leaf litter. Again, that's observational. We could do some more work to back that up. But we still see taxonomic shifts in fungal abundance connected to soil conditions, but may also be affected by the litter that they're receiving. So all in all, kind of backing out, we do see different lawn microbiomes. We see it more importantly among the properties that had a previous forest history. We see a homogenization occurring more so with the bacteria than the fungi, and pH and nitrogen are major predictors of this. So if we're managing our ag systems and then we convert those into a residential area, those have already been disturbed. We've maybe already done liming or other pH modifications. We've already done fertility adjustments. So we don't see that same shift that we do from our maybe unmanaged landscapes to our managed landscapes. And so lastly, why does this matter? As we see shifts in land use, we may see changes in the microbiome. And if we have these systematic shifts, that may impact what organisms are present and if possible homogenization. And ultimately, that comes down to then what are those different microbes capable of doing? What are they able to do, and what are the distribution of those metabolic pathways across taxa? So are we maybe unintentionally selecting against certain processes out in the environment as we modulate these microbiomes? So thank you.
So we have time for two questions.
On your lawn size, were there any differences in the level of lawn management?
Sure. So the question was on the lawn sites, what was the difference in terms of management of how those were used? So there was an initial survey done with all of the homeowners. They all managed their lawns themselves, so no commercial lawn care. Being that this was a study, you know, out in the wild, so to speak, with these different homeowners, we let them manage their lawns. Amongst the homeowners that we worked with, all of them said maybe they fertilized on occasion, but doing this kind of work in a residential setting may be different than a golf course setting where other kinds of work like this is done. We don't have that track record to know exactly how these properties were managed. And one case, over 120 years, that's been a house. So, you know, there's no way to get an exact record of how they were managed. We can make some assumptions, but that's about as good as we can do. Yeah. So the question was, did we specifically look at any human health pathogens in these properties? And no, we didn't. We could probably dig back through the data, but that was not an initial question of ours. Yes?
Did you try to detect any information on the effect of use of herbicides?
So the question is, sure, the question is, did we look for any herbicidal effects on the microbiome? And again, we didn't as well, without knowing exactly how the properties were managed or what the homeowners were applying. And self-reported management, as you could expect, is pretty spotty at best. So asking a homeowner what they did, and I mean, over the case of the study, two of the properties I was working with sold, but we were able to negotiate continued research with the new homeowners. So that's the nature of doing work with people, right? All right, thank you.